Today, let's talk financial advising, retirement and tax strategy. Where do you put your money? The good, the bad, and the ugly. Because today will help you build your legacy with the fire on the wall.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Fly on the Wall Finance. I'm your host, Jamie Malm. I am also the owner and founder of Iron Horse Financial, and I am very excited today. We've got a guest speaker on, Keith Gangle, who is one of our senior portfolio managers at Gradient Investments. It's also a CFA and somebody I've worked with for years. For those of you that are already clients of the firm, you probably recognize Gradient Investments as they are the key portfolio manager that we utilize and that I've worked with for over 20 years. So Keith, I'm excited to have you on today. We get a lot of questions from clients about what do we think this is going to do? What's happening with the markets? What should they be fearful of? So I'm going to use your brain today to share some insights there. But before I get into specific questions, when you look at the overall market landscape today, is there something specific that's standing out most to you right now?
Yeah, I would say the negative headlines, the kind of the volatility of the overall market. I've been doing this for over 30 years, but there's certainly been this last couple of years, and this year in particular, there's a lot of news headlines that make people kind of scratch your head, maybe make them worry a little bit. But again, there's always concerns in the market. This year, I think the news headlines are a little bit more pronounced. The one thing that we look, you know, taking a step back from all this volatility and what's going on, when I refer to the market, I'm referring to the S&P 500. The last 3 years have been fantastic. 2023 was up 26%. 2024 was 25%. Last year was almost 18%. The question we get, and kind of I'm sure your clients are asking, is, well, what's 2026 going to bring? We had three great years. What can we expect in 2026? Well, I'll get out my crystal ball. It's probably as good as anybody else's, I guess. Again, it's hard to predict the future. But when we look at this year, if I had to pick one factor, you know, for the last 30 years of investing, if I had to pick at one factor that kind of drives the overall market when you look forward, that's corporate earnings of the S&P 500. The expectations, you know, kind of all the Wall Street gurus get together and put a number out what the expectations are for this year's earnings growth rate. It's 15%. To put that in perspective, normal good year is 5 to 7. So we're going to do 2-3x that. So I think the tailwinds for a good market are in place, but there's certainly, you know, political headlines, there's tariff headlines, there's gold moving, there's Bitcoin stuff. There's no lack of news flow out there at all.
Well, those are the things I want to ask you about. And I appreciate kind of the overall insight. We should not take for granted that we've got you exclusive to answer our questions. You're a regular on CNBC and Bloomberg and Fox Business News. So your advice and your insights are not something that I take lightly. Appreciate you being here. I want to talk about, you mentioned tariffs, and obviously that's been a news headline for, gosh, or coming upon a year, because it was April of last year that this really started impacting markets. But we just had a Supreme Court ruling that is potentially changing the landscape or impacting maybe what we see moving forward. Talk to me a little bit about where that fits into the overall financial picture.
Sure. Let's go back to last year, almost a year ago, not quite, as April 2nd, which Trump referred to as Liberation Day. I think the only thing that liberated people was from their wallets for about a month. The market sold off pretty aggressively. The markets were almost down 20%. But then it rebounded. Everybody kind of got their footing. Everybody took a deep breath. What do these tariffs actually mean? In the end, it's a tariff, which is basically a tax, whether the importer's paying it, the consumer's paying it, or the exporter's paying it. So there's some kind of tax. It's a matter of who's paying it. So the market basically kind of evaluated what tariffs were going to be. They're pretty aggressive, right? Because there's a thing called the effective tariff rate. Prior to Trump's presidency, we're at about 2.5%. He made the announcements that jumped up almost to 20-some percent. That's a tenfold jump, something you haven't seen in over 100 years. So that's why the market sold off pretty aggressively. Everybody took a deep breath, said, okay, can corporations handle these tariffs? Can consumers handle these tariffs? And the answer last year was yes, they can. It means individuals are paying a little bit more. Hopefully we're getting some benefit from some trade deals, maybe some onshoring of jobs, things like that, that, you know, aren't necessarily in the numbers yet. but they're on the, kind of on the come. So markets did well last year. Now we get coming to this year is like you just mentioned last week was the overturn of the Trump tariffs. So basically they didn't overturn all of them, but about 60% of the tariffs that were in place were deemed illegal. So they have to roll those off. So, and the funny thing is the market reaction was kind of muted. And the reason why it was muted, because I think it was about the probability creeped up to about 70% that the tariffs were going to get rolled off. So investors kind of expected that. And so it was a little surprising we didn't see a little more action in the market. But again, I'm not a huge tariff fan by any means, but I don't think they're nearly as bad as what, you know, media and people were talking about for the last year. Now, that being said, so if they're rolled off, does that mean they're going to be really a positive thing? I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case either. I think companies adapt, whatever the cost is, they'll either pass on some on to the consumer, eat some of the cost. But, you know, U.S. companies are pretty resilient of how to operate their business. And that's what we look at. We're investing in the actual company and earnings. That's why I mentioned if I look at one factor, it's looking at earnings. We just pretty much wrapped up Q4 earnings from last year. You know, the last 3 weeks we've been evaluating these companies and they've been pretty good. They've come in at 12-13% growth rate. That's a healthy for the quarter.
You mentioned corporate earnings several times as kind of being the key indicator of what we look at for earnings. There is some talk about potential refunds to companies, right, on the tariffs. Is that already priced into the markets? Do you think that's going to impact anything or
where do you see that landing? Yeah, going more in depth on your question of tariffs originally, the problem, it's kind of a big unknown. So as investors, we don't necessarily like unknowns. You kind of want to focus on what you know, and that's generally corporate earnings. Now the question is, okay, so 60% of those tariffs get repealed. Now what? Trump basically came out and said that you can, I think it's Section 122, basically put on 10-15% as max tariffs back on. So the ones that got taken off, he's going to put them back on across the boards. But that can only last for 150 days or 5 months. So I don't think tariffs are going away by any means. He's going to find another backdoor way of putting them on. So the question is the refund. So it's a big number. So the amount that the U.S. government collected since last April to recently, it was about $170 billion with a B. That's a big number. And to your question, is does that, in theory, that should be paid back, right? If they're deemed illegal, that should go back. But that's going to end up in the courts. And I got a feeling that's going to be years, if not a decade before, if you were to get money back. And the other thing is, okay, who are you going to pay back? Are you going to pay back the corporations? Or are you going to pay back the individuals that were getting passed on it? So could corporations net benefit because maybe they passed on that tariff cost to the consumer already who had to pay it? They didn't necessarily pay it, but now the government, U.S. government's going to go back and reimburse the companies that got right. The tariff. So it's like, yeah, I don't think that's the case. I think that's why everybody's just kind of holding their breath. And I don't think tariffs are going away. I think there'll be some other version of them. And the other thing is that $170 billion, that's going into the U.S. coffers that they're using elsewhere. I don't care who wins the next election in the next 4-8 years. Anytime you get a new revenue source for the government, I don't think either party's
going to. They don't want to shut it off.
They're not. Right?
That's hard to shut off. Yeah.
Okay. As an investor and what we're looking at in the world, I always kind of side-eyed the tariffs. I'm like, I think this is... And at that run rate of 170 million, you were talking, it could be anywhere from 8 to 10% of our annual revenue budget for the government. Do you think any politician's like, 8, 10%? I don't think I need that. I don't like the tariffs, but they don't like not getting money either. So I think they're here to stay. It's just what version is going to be. And I do not think to your question of our companies going to get paid back. Maybe, but I think that's so far down the road that we can't put that in our analysis of looking at valuations of companies.
But sounds like nor are they really expecting it. So whatever happens, they're going to adapt. They're going to, you know, adjust to whatever the new business rules are. So it's not like refunds, whichever way they fall, really impact these corporate expectations for how profitable they are. So very minimal impact and probably here to stay. Just under what law are they going to be?
Adapted.
So is that fair? Okay.
Yeah. $170 billion. Is that ultimately going to go back to companies, individuals? I don't think so. And if it does, it'll be a fraction of that. And it's going to be years out. It's the government's not going to hand out money if they don't necessarily have, there'll be lawsuits. And sure. So at some point in time, there could be some shakeout of that. But I do think that as much as both sides complain about tariffs and the impact, I think that unfortunately the byproduct is a revenue source for the government. And I don't think that's going away.
So let's talk then. We've talked corporate earnings, primary driver. Let's talk about then the overall health of the economy. Two main things that we look at here, is that labor market and inflation, or what are your key components when we look at overall health of the economy?
Yeah, those would be the next couple important ones. The overall health of the economy is the labor market. I always tell everybody, and I think I've told you before, that no one can spend like the U.S. consumer. So if the consumer is working, they have money in their pockets, they will spend, they'll all spend whatever they make as well. So unemployment rate, the last couple of numbers have been 4.4%. That's a very healthy number. It's full unemployment, a 50-year low was 3.5%. So we're at, you know, we've been bouncing between, say, 4.1 and 4.7, I think was the highest recent in the last several months. We're in at 4.3. And the big debate there is, okay, the other thing that I'm sure we'll touch on is AI impact on the overall economy.
Yeah.
Is that destroying jobs? I do think some jobs are in peril. I do think it makes other jobs more efficient, so you can get more things done. For example, I use it, you know, I wouldn't want to be a copywriter. We write a lot of market reflections and output stuff, right, of thought pieces. And I write those. I still write them all. We used to have another portfolio manager correct them and take them 2 hours. And then we'd pass it down to someone in our media studio to do the final check. Well, now I still write it. I put it through a AI editor, get it back in 2 minutes. And that just saved, you know, probably 3 hours of time that people can do stuff more efficiently. So again, if you're in a position of a copywriter, like, that's probably not the greatest spot to be in. But I think, so anyway, long-winded answer, I think unemployment at this 4.3, 4.4, 4.5, we kind of bouncing around. I don't think AI destroys all these jobs they're talking about. I think we're still in a very healthy place in the near term. Now, we look out a year or two, we'll have to keep evaluating where jobs are going, if AI is starting to displace more jobs.
What about inflation? So we hear that inflation is under control. It's coming down. We're kind of watching the Fed, been lowering rates. Are we at risk of entering a time period where we see reacceleration of this? And we've got, what, 40 years of, you know, almost a whole generation of people here that really haven't dealt with like inflation that we saw in the 80s. What should we be concerned with is?
Yeah, inflation, that's the, if you go back to those 3 years of good markets, that was pre-2022. If you remember, that's when inflation hit CPI is a measure of inflation, that hit 9.1% in June of 2022. The reason that government was pumping a lot of money coming out of COVID, a lot of dollars chasing few amount of goods, we had supply chain, so that spiked up. Inflation's absolutely horrible at those levels. That just destroys your purchasing power, which is bad for the companies, bad for individuals, it's bad for the overall economy. And that's why you saw a slowdown in the markets. You saw a sell-off in 2022. Stock market was down 20%. Bond market is down 13%. So I guess your question is, are we going to looking at something where we see inflation kind of start going back up again? I don't think so. One of the key components or input to inflation is, which people don't talk about enough, is price of oil. Price of oil has been coming down for the last year. I mean, obviously, its current administration's a big fan of drill, baby, drill. I think they mentioned that again the other night. They want to keep prices low because that's a direct input cost to individuals, especially where you're at, you know, central part of the country, mm-hmm. where we're at in Minnesota. It's a big deal. People drive a lot, and it's not just your driving. It's every package that's delivered, everything you get to the store. That's all transportation costs, which is on fuel. Everything that I'm touching, this desk, this microphone, those are oils and resins. That's based off price of oil. So price of oil comes down, that input cost, which is touches inflation all across the board, I think it's a good thing. So that's not, you know, an issue. I don't see the government pumping a bunch of money in like they did in COVID. Supply chains seem to be fixed. So I think we're stuck between that the Fed's target is 2%. I don't know if we get there by the end of this year. I doubt it. We're, you know, at 2.3, 2.5, 2.6, 2.1. I think we're bouncing around, but we're below 3, and I don't think we're headed towards 5. So I think that's a lower issue. But you're right. If something happens where inflation starts picking back up, we definitely have to change our stance and say, that's an issue. Now we have to reposition our portfolios to be a little more defensive, a little bit more what works well in a higher inflation environment. I don't think we're there. The other thing, could we have to change our portfolios if unemployment starts, you know, for some reason, maybe AI faster or something happens where there's a bunch of companies, you know, laying people off, unemployment goes above 5%. Yeah, then that's a little bit of a game changer. You probably want to avoid some consumer stuff and maybe invest more in kind of staples like companies, that stuff you have to buy.
One of the benefits of having an active portfolio manager like you and your team is it would be near impossible for the general consumer to keep an eye on each of these things and the indicators. And then what do I own? And do I have a duplication of companies? And are they in the right sectors? And what things should I be looking at as I'm going into maybe a changing labor market? That's why, in my opinion, it's so beneficial to have you and your team that's doing that. Because as you have to make adjustments, as you see things that, hey, maybe we're overweighted here in this consumer sector, you guys are making adjustments for that.
Yeah, exactly. 100% right. You nailed it. You summed it up well. That's exactly what we do as active portfolio managers. I'm not like day trading. So when I say active, I'm not like buying and selling stocks. One of the portfolios I manage has about 55 stocks in there. You know, in the course of a year, maybe it's 10 stocks. I'll add new ones and take out 10 old ones as I feel opportunity, or I'll buy a little more of something I think is cheap on valuation that has some growth drivers coming up. And then in the case where, you know, this last year at the end of the year where technology had such a massive run, those Mag 7 names, those are the kind of names if we own, we kind of were starting to trim a little bit, just kind of, that's what we do as active portfolio manager. We're trying to go, you know, the old hockey analogy and Wayne Gretzky, kind of go where the puck's, where you think the puck's going to be, not where it's at, right? So you kind of, and that's how investors look. They're looking at 6 to 12 months ahead, saying what's going to happen 6 to 12 months. Again, it's, there's a lot of inputs that you have to look at, and you've touched on a lot of the main ones. It's earnings, it's unemployment, it's inflation. There's a lot of different things where I can't emphasize enough how corporate earnings season, those 3 weeks every quarter that we look at the companies and hear the fundamentals of what's driving them. And then you look at maybe a couple of companies just start saying, oh, inflation is becoming a problem. Then you have to start take a step back, like, huh, I've heard this from 3-4 companies. Maybe I need to change my tune on what could be happening. Maybe you're hearing a bunch of layoffs, you know, oh, maybe unemployment will be edging it. Because unemployment is a trailing indicator. It's not a leading indicator, which means usually when things are going south, you start laying people off, right? So then it's, you have to be careful just relying on that one data point.
Sure. Let's talk about something then specifically that maybe was a surprise to some, maybe not to you, but gold had such strong momentum last year.
Yeah, I would put gold, I would put myself in the surprise camp with gold. The massive move it had, it was up 70%. Silver was up 100% last year, the precious metals. So I've been doing this, dating myself, for 30 plus years. I'm more in the Warren Buffett camp. I like to invest in companies that produce cash flow and earnings. They have workers, they're producing some widgets. Where gold, again, it's good to have an investment in it. It's just, we always say, you know, allocate appropriately. And so then gold had, so it did, you know, the question you're getting, did it surprise me? Yeah, it did. After 30 years, you see these massive moves in gold. They'll have these moves like we had last couple of years where it's up, you know, over 100%. But then you may go a decade where it goes sideways or down. So that's why we always say, you know, allocate appropriately. And that's going to be different for every person. But I would say the general rule of thumb is kind of 3 to maybe 10% allocation, depends on how conservative or aggressive of an investor you want. That's kind of what I think. What you mean, if you're having a 50% allocation last year, you'd look wonderful. But then also you may go the next, if you keep that allocation, you may go 10 years where gold doesn't do much. I mean, we've seen that historically where it performs very well over time, but you get these short periods of, and the reason gold did so well last year is we had central banks across the world buying gold. They're worried about all these debt, different issues going on, you know, what's going to happen to the US dollar, different things like that. So you had that contributing to gold. And then at the end of the year, silver was up. It was crazy amount. So you start, we've been doing it a long time. Usually when you get these 70, 80% moves, no matter what the asset category is, in such a short period of time, it's probably a good thing to start taking some profits, or at least get back to your target allocation. And just for example, like if we talk about the volatility in gold and silver, if we saw when President Trump basically introduced a potential new Fed chair, the next day, the market's like, oh, that Fed chair is not, it will be truly independent. It won't be just Trump's puppet there at the Fed. And the dollar got stronger. Gold and silver had one of the worst days. Silver had its worst day ever. I think it was almost down 30%. Gold was down 12%, worst days since like 1980s. So you just have to be careful. That's, again, so the question we get now is, what about it going forward? Again, I think we've seen, if we had to put in a baseball analogy, I think we're in the 7th, 8th, 9th inning. Not that you can't allocate it to it, but just keep it appropriate and don't. There's a lot of news headlines that fear mongering. They want you to, they're selling a product or a gold bullion or whatever it is. So there's, you have to be careful of that on those physical commodities. But I, generally speaking, over a long period of time, I'd rather be invested in companies' stocks because they produce cash flow. They have employees, you know, they generally grow the economy, whereas gold's more of a store of value, kind of an inflation hedge.
And I think it's human nature, right? We tend to chase or want the things that have already maybe seen their best run. So gold's up 70% and now we're like, oh gosh, I got to get in there. Well, you've already, that's the old buy, you know, buying high, I'm selling low, the exact opposite of what you want to do, but it's that human nature, that cycle, that mistake that people get drawn into. So great insight. I appreciate it because it is something that we get asked a lot about on, should I rebalance? Do I need to, you know, get out while the getting's good, or do I pedal down and keep going? So let's talk about then the other side of the specific portfolios that we get asked a lot about: Bitcoin, crypto, digital currency. It's been so hot the last couple of years and we saw a sharp decline right at the end of 2025. What's your outlook going into 2026 on Bitcoin, crypto, just overall the digital currency landscape?
Yeah, that's, we have various portfolios here and those are two that we got a lot of questions on last fall and end of the year and continue to get questions on the precious metals portfolio, which has gold, silver, and other things in it, doing fantastic. I don't want to miss out. I should be buying it. And the other one that you set up is the digital discovery portfolio, the portfolio that invests in kind of AI and technology and, and crypto and blockchain. It's kind of our innovative leading edge technology portfolio. That had fantastic performance for 2 years in a row. And then come fall, what ended up happening is, you know, Bitcoin, which is, you know, a part of it, or at least the players that, you know, the picks and shovels of Bitcoin, not the actual Bitcoin itself, it sold off, you know, from recently it was 120,000. I think yesterday, Bitcoin moves around by thousands a day. It was around 63,000. Yeah. Everybody says 60 is kind of the bottom. So that portfolio has been a little bit of a headwind because part of that's invested in that. But I do think if I had to, again, that one, same thing as the precious metals, just allocate appropriately. I always call that kind of the portfolio or that category your kind of fun money. You're kind of like, I want to allocate this because it's growth, hot technology. But be aware that, you know, there's just like gold where you're up 100%, you can be up 100%, but then you can be down 50% in a matter of months, you know, when things turn against it. Like I said, Bitcoin itself has gone from 120,000 down to, it's almost been cut in half here in the last 3-4 months. That's a pretty big downdraft. And again, it's fun when you buy it at 30, 40, 50 and goes to 120. It's not so fun if you were the last person buying it and at 120 down to 60. That being said, I think that's a good place to be allocating still, just the category, the technology, the AI, the blockchain, not just Bitcoin. I'm talking the whole kind of technology evolution. But again, you want to allocate 5 to 10% of your overall portfolio. Again, depends on your risk tolerance. So, and again, the second question I always get following these two categories, which one would you buy over the other one? I would lean towards that technology. My background of 30 years has been growth stocks, which is generally technology names, which is a lot in that, you know, kind of digital discovery type of portfolio. I think AI, we're in the early innings. I think, you know, AI, we touched on a little earlier. We're probably in the second, third inning. You know, precious metals, I think we're 7th, 8th, 9th. So if I use that as an analogy, it's going to be volatile. Both of them are volatile. But if I look out, you know, 2-3 years, I think that category, the AI, the Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency, the blockchain will do better than precious metals, that silvers, the golds, the palladium type of thing. So that's how I'd allocate it. And again, those are fast growing spaces, and it's, you always get the FOMO, the fear of missing out. How come I'm not in this? It's like, well, you're not 100% allocated to it. It would have been great when you're up 100%, but when you get that 50% drawdown, it doesn't feel so good. And you do a good job allocating to your clients. You do, you know, clients aren't, they're spread out, right? One of our principles, you know, we always talk about diversification, how important it is, and you do a fantastic job with the clients kind of making sure they're diversified. You may want all this fun, hot stuff, but when it's down 50%, you may not want it all that much.
Yep. So if we look moving forward, just expect some volatility, but we're early on. It's not going anywhere. So it's not like suddenly we're, you know, not going to see gains in those categories, but it's going to be more volatile maybe than the rest of your portfolio. So just allocate according to expect that volatility and be okay with it. I think is always good advice. The things that we have not seen a lot of growth in a few years, as you talk about the markets, the S&P, the bigger companies, we have the Magnificent Seven that's been primarily technology based. We're seeing a shift to smaller kind of mid-cap companies beating some of those large companies for the first time in years. Talk to me a little bit about what your expectation is for that moving forward.
Yeah, that's exciting. So the last couple of years, the strong performance, and even to most of last year, was driven by those Mag 7, those top 10 kind of technology names, AI excitement, huge numbers, huge earnings growth rate. And it was just great for the overall market rate because they make such a big percentage. The top 10 names make up 40% of the S&P 500. That's a big change. I mean, you go back just 10 years ago, it was 20%, right? So it's the market's reliant on those top 10 to really keep driving the market forward. Us as stock pickers and investment professionals, we like more breadth. That's a more healthy market. So we're starting to finally see that now. And, you know, it's value stocks are doing as well as growth stocks. In some cases, are outperforming. You're also now finally starting to see last year, and we didn't talk about it here, but international markets finally outperformed U.S. markets. I'm a very U.S. bullish guy, but last year we saw some international outperformance. And I think this year international will be good. Now to your question on mid, small, mid cap, I think that's a great place to play. And there's a lot of names, a lot of stocks in there. You're talking several thousand. So there's kind of like that volatility of that kind of AI, crypto, blockchain stuff or precious metals. As you go down market cap, there's a lot more volatility because, you know, it's your Bob's Tire Shop in Nebraska, these small kind of, I mean, exaggerating there, but it's smaller companies, right? That it could be driven by one product that's a hot product and all of a sudden their earnings growth rate can be up 100%. And they're generally US centric, right? So I think one thing we haven't talked about is, you know, what could happen benefiting the US consumer this year is the one big beautiful bill from last year. I think that's tax returns would be better for the, especially for that consumer that's been under a little bit more pressure on the lower side of things. I think that's wonderful for them. Small business, that's a good thing. So I think these small mid-cap companies, we're definitely spending some time looking at trying to find some good companies there because I think they can do very well. They've been underappreciated for almost a decade. And usually, again, you get these periods of underperformance. You'll get that spurt of where mid-cap names could have a nice 2-3 year run and, you know, play a little bit of catch up. They're a lot cheaper on valuation than the S&P 500 as well.
Yeah, I think it's important that you've got somebody like Grady Investments, like these active portfolio managers that are watching for opportunities like that, because we tend to, you know, look at what we see in headlines and we know it's technology, we know it's AI, we know it's gold, and we're missing out on potentially these smaller companies, maybe international things that aren't what we're used to seeing or hearing or experiencing returns in. And that's where we miss out on potential opportunities and diversification, which makes things not so up and down for everybody over the years. So
yeah, obviously you do a great job there diversifying. Now people would argue, well, then I'm missing out all that hot stuff. If I'd been all in, just, I wish I would have been all in precious metals or all in
some
kind of AI. But it's like, well, now the markets have turned, those are down. Now look at these small cap names that were kind of underloved. Look at these international stocks. Again, that's why we diversify. And again, when you diversify, there'll be some areas of your portfolio that may be not the hottest, but at some point in time, the market's going to rotate back into them. And so if you have the allocation, like, huh, thanks for that allocation. It's nice that these mid cap names, these international, these non-Meg 70s, 493 names are actually starting to participate. And that's what us as, you know, investment professionals, that gives us, we don't have to just look at 10 names. Say, oh, we got to own these 10 names. Now we can, there's a lot of areas that there's a lot of exciting companies in the US. And, you know, it's the AI we talked about, not just the AI chipset companies like NVIDIA that's driving the market, but it's how about all the companies that build all these data centers? How about the equipment rental companies? How about, you know, the ditch diggers? How about the lighting companies, all the power, all this? There's a lot of companies that we can invest in that play into this AI build out.
Okay, final question. There's a lot of negative headlines out there, kind of scare tactics about the next great depression, projecting the 2030s may look like the 1930s. What do you have to say for some of those that are fearful that we're heading towards this next Great Depression.
Yeah, we like to look at all sides of the, you know, the coin and kind of see where we're missing things, if we're bullish and if we're bearish, why we're missing things. I think that's, again, headline kind of grabbing news. I want attention for subscribers. Maybe it's selling a product that is tailored to that fear factor. I don't think, again, the fundamentals are in place where unemployment's at 4.3. Check, good. Earnings, 15% growth rate. If it does it even north of 10, check, good. That those are my big check boxes of inflation. Is it going back to 9%? No. Is it going back to 5? I don't think so in this next year. Check, good. So the backdrop there is good. Tariffs, who knows? Again, that's how we started the conversation. Those are all over the map. In the end of the day, I think they're here to stay. What version? I don't know. It's probably maybe a little less than what originally you got, you know, April 2nd, Liberation Day, of 20-some percent effective tariff rate. Maybe we end up at 10, but 10 is still a lot more than 2.5. That money's coming to the government. They're not going to give it up. I think consumers have already adapted to these tariff rates. So I think that's fine. There's always, people are worried about going back to 1920s, 1930s. I don't think that's in the cards, but don't worry. Every day I get up and look at where could I be wrong on, you know, we're more constructive on this year. Where am I wrong? I think those are kind of the pillars I want to always be checking, but also I'm reading other news sources and checking data, but we see a lot of these charts and it's unfortunately, it's a little bit of fear mongering of selling a service or whatever product that, magically whatever they're talking about would fit into this category, or it's a headline grabbing. It's like, if you're just a news writer, like, right. How can you get headlines? Well, we're in the 1920s, we're in Great Depression coming. I don't see it. So we'll see. It could be a black swan event that we're not expecting and which would change our tune, right? Just like when COVID hit, you know, that was unexpected. No one thought that was. Economy was basically world's ending. Economy's collapsing. Market was down 35% in a matter of 5 weeks. We didn't know where the bottom was, but after doing this, again, dating myself almost 30 years, I get this big pit in my stomach, and usually that's a huge buy signal. And that's kind of what we got about that time when the markets pulled back so quickly. We didn't know where the bottom was going to be. Economy was basically over. No one could go out. That was a huge buying opportunity. So, and again, some event like that could happen, but then that's usually a buying opportunity, to tell you the truth. So we'll stay tuned and we'll keep watching out for everybody.
Yeah, great. I agree with you. I think my experience has been when you see something that is fear-mongering or expect this worst-case scenario, look to see how they benefit if you buy into that. If it's because now they've got a new subscriber, you bought their newsletter, or you've allocated now to this portfolio that was the solution to it, that usually is an indicator. Maybe I need to take a step back and decide the source of advice, right? Who benefits more by me making a decision here on what they're leading me towards. So that's great insight. You always have great information to share. One that I love about market commentary. So you've got weekly insights, you've got monthly updates, we do quarterly economic outlooks, and then you've got the new podcast. So talk to me a little bit about some of the commentary and where people can go to access more commentary if they want it.
Yeah, you can go to greatinvestments.com and it's all over there. We put all almost 200 pieces of information in the different various portfolio managers. And this morning we actually had our weekly podcast. I think we're almost up to 100, which is almost, we do it weekly. So we're almost 2 years of doing that.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's a half hour long. And usually the first 5 minutes is kind of, we do some fun stuff of two truths and a lie. And then we get into market moving stuff. Funny that the topic today was Supreme Court decision and what that was. So we had, 25 minutes on that. And the last 5 minutes is usually fun, which we talked about the men's and women's Olympic hockey team. So, which I thought was very fun to watch from being a sports fan and American, and kind of the excitement that built around. I think that was just very, I'm old, so I do remember 1980 barely. I was a very young kid there, and it's been 46 years. Think about that. It's a long period of time. I watch it with my two of my three kids, and I'm like, 46 years. I don't know if 46, that's putting me at a pretty old age. We better get something done for this game when it was going on. So it's nice to see they won the gold.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I appreciate so much you joining us today. Everybody that has joined us for this episode, hope you found it valuable. GradientInvestments.com is where you can go for information on our portfolio managers. If you want to learn more about Keith, if you want to see some of his highlights from the media appearances you've been on, plus all of that commentary, link to the podcast. You guys do a great job of keeping all of our clients up to date on what they can expect, what you're expecting, things to watch out for. So thank you so much, Keith, for joining. And for everybody listening, we'll see you next time. That wraps up another episode of the Fly on the Wall podcast. Join us next time as we continue the conversations and bringing you behind the scenes in the world of finance. And don't forget to stay connected with us on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And we will see you next time.
All matters discussed during this show are for informational purposes only. Opinions expressed are solely those of Iron Horse Financial Services and staff. All topics covered are believed to be from reliable sources. However, Iron Horse Financial Services makes no representations as to its accuracy or completeness. This commercial shall in no way be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents of any other state other than Kansas or otherwise permitted. Topics should be discussed with your financial advisor prior to implementation. Advisory services offered through Iron Horse Financial Services, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas. Insurance products and services are offered through Iron Horse Retirement, an affiliated company. Iron Horse Financial Services and Iron Horse Retirement are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency.